Everyone's asleep. Everyone but me. And I can't help feel like I'm doing this all by myself.
Ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Have you ever noticed that when you try to have a presentation of some description, you've got two conspiracy theorists talking to each other, it doesn't turn into a presentation, it turns into a conversation that is a tangentry nature. But, you know, look, the world doesn't revolve round and things don't go in a straight line sometimes because there's a lot of fleshed out areas that need a little bit of attention first before you know where you're actually going to end up in a conclusion based upon large quantities of seemingly irrelevant evidence that come together to form a very, very clear picture indeed. Tom Filer is my guest. Welcome back, sir.
Hi.
Now, you have a website of some description, don't you?
Yes.
Would you?
Yeah, people can, you know, get information on the work I do through www.essentialsinvesting.com. Essentials with an S, investing.com. They can also go to www.wallstreettosmallstreet.com, where there's a lot of articles and information which go through, I think, some of the things that we've been talking about here tonight. That's www.wallstreettosmallstreet.com.
Now, point being behind giving out those websites is for the listener's sake, because, as I said, there's a lot of information that needs to be fleshed out. We simply can't cover in just a two-hour interview. It takes much, much longer. In fact, Tom's done much longer DVD experiences with Pastor Lindsay Williams as well, of course. You can't just squeeze it in the time frame is what I'm saying. Anyway, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, what I'd like to do, Vinny, is give one more example, and I really have to indulge the patience of your audience with one more example of one of the possible reasons why gold went down, and when I say gold, you can think of silver as well, gold and silver. And this is a complicated possibility, but I just want to kind of throw it out there once again, just to give the people another example of how this very, very large gold market, or a portion of it, is really goes through a very limited number of entities, and how that can have an influence on the price of gold. But before I do that, if you mentioned Lindsay Williams, I refer to him as Chaplain Lindsay Williams, and Chaplain has a new DVD, if I might mention that, that has come out, and he has in another DVD packed away just some tremendous information. Your listeners can go to the Prophecy Club, www.prophecy, with a C, P-R-O-P-H-E-C-Y, P-H-E-C-Y, club.com, to get information on Chaplin's new DVD. This is an update from a more extensive and longer DVD that that was done not too long ago, just really, I'll say, recently as well. And in this DVD, Chaplin covers a subject like Cyprus, the Starling real story. I mean, what really happened in Cyprus. Chaplin talks about the American dollar and how long the dollar, in his opinion, will continue to be viable. He talks on this DVD about health care, how the world's only hope is America. He also has a discussion about Saudi Arabia and some what he feels and what his sources tell him are some dynamics that are going on in Saudi Arabia as well as Iran, and then also another discussion on derivatives. So I just want to encourage people to consider, you know, take a look at that that DVD. And some updated information from the last more extensive DVD. Well, just to go through just one more example of how the gold system works and you know how it might have been influenced. You know, listeners need to understand that you know the gold market it's gigantic. You know, people buy gold in every corner of the world today, and they buy it for many different purposes. And yet, the gold market is not, I guess, what you would call a publicly traded market. So you know, there's a lot of things about the transaction of gold that we just don't know. And that's very hard to quantify with information that we have. The World Gold Council provides a lot of good information about the transaction of gold out there. But you know, people have to understand that it's not a very transparent market. And so a lot of things go on through and by a lot of entities out there where it's just really difficult to know exactly what's going on. So, you know, this is why, and, you know, I kind of refer to it as conspiracy theories, but as a money manager, you know, we deal in data. You know, we deal in data, we deal in information, and we deal in, you know, what I refer to as kind of following the money. You know, if you know what the system is and you follow the money through that system, that can help you to understand what's going on out there. And so, you know, I refer to it as conspiracy theories, but it's really from an investment manager standpoint, we are always looking at, you know, following the money, understanding the system and how the money makes its way through the system and then drawing suppositions and conclusions from that. Which then we take and then which we, of course, apply to our money management and to the management of our clients' money. And, you know, we then come up with what we call risk management strategies, which are based in our various observations and suppositions for what might happen out there and to have our clients as protected as possible.
Can I interject here? This is not cartel theory because, as you've described, the gold market is controlled by, well, the vast majority of the gold market anyway, controlled by these very few major players who are working in concert to a degree. Is that not a technical definition of a cartel?
Yeah, I guess it would be, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, okay. If so you've got a limited market. Number of actors that are transacting or business goes through.
Okay. So it's pretty straightforward. You're dealing with a gold cartel.
Yeah.
Conduct your business accordingly.
Yeah. And the thing that people need to understand is that, you know, systems are created, you know, by entities. Every system out there, you know. I think on that website, Wall Street to Small Street, there's an article there where I describe how the stock market was created. You know, what is, you know, and then who created it. And normally it's reasonable that whoever creates a system normally creates it first and foremost to their benefit. I mean, it'd be silly to create a system that wasn't to your benefit. That would be kind of silly and perhaps stupid to do that. So whoever creates these systems, and in one article I described how the stock market was created by whom, and then how the stock market benefits those people who created the system. And it's the same with the gold system out there. There's a system for how gold moves and is transacted. It was, you know, created by somebody. And again, my observation would be whoever created that system, they're going to first and foremost benefit, you know, from that system. So I think people have to keep that, you know, in mind. And that's how kind of you follow the money through this system, understanding how the system works and who it was primarily created to benefit.
So no different from the Federal Reserve System either.
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, and people, that's a very good point. You know, people should just take a little time to understand how the Federal Reserve System was created, who it was created by, and who it is there to serve. And I think a lot of people will be shocked to find out that, you know, out there in you know, the media, the understanding is kind of given out there that the Federal Reserve is there to serve us, the people. The Federal Reserve is there to serve us. They're there to somehow make unemployment low, which they've never been able to do that, and yet the politicians, you know, kind of threw that on there to try to make, I guess, the Fed look a little bit better and to give them social conscience or something. But that's one of the things that they're, you know, one of the responses they're given is to bring unemployment, you know, down. And I'll make a remark about that. And the other thing is to, you know, kind of, you know, to regulate the currency. As well, you know, and supposedly, and you hear this all the time, is to keep your currency strong. That's supposed to, you know, and the Federal Reserve is out there right now, and they're really, you know, presented as the savior of our system, the savior of our lives. They're there to help and to benefit us. But, you know, if you just read, well, who created the Federal Reserve, who serves on it, how is it formed, and what's the purpose of it, you'll find that it's really, they're not there to serve the American people. They really are not. And so I would just encourage people, that's another two-hour show, Vinny, but that's something that people should look into. One last example I'll give, if I might, and this probably is maybe one of the most complicated ones of kind of how the gold system works, is something referred to as the gold carry trade. That's a very technical term, but so let me just kind of describe that a little bit. You've got bullion banks out there which hold the gold. And so an entity that is looking to be able to buy gold and then to sell it to somebody else, and we kind of went through that system, how it works with DLD, they need to go to a bullion bank, and they need to purchase the gold. The bullion banks, they lease, the central bank lease gold to the bullion bank. Okay, so just these are central banks. Remember, I established that since 2010, central banks have become, you know, larger owners of gold out there. So central banks lease gold to these bullion banks.
They lease the gold?
Yes.
Like, you know, you have this gold in your possession for a certain amount of time, like Hong Kong handover type lease?
Instead of, you know, the central banks don't take the physical gold and give it to the bullion banks, but they, central banks, they lease gold to the bullion banks that then supply this representation of gold, you know, to other buyers of the gold.
Well, so where's the actual real gold in the, does any of these institutions, like, they're all the ones trading the gold and all of that kind of stuff, do any of them actually have any gold at all?
In many cases, they don't. It's just leased. I suppose the system was created that way, and I guess one rationale for that would be that it'd be very difficult to physically move gold as quickly as it's transacted. You see, so this would be one of the rationales where, you know, if an institution buys, you know, millions or hundreds of millions of dollars or tens of millions of dollars of gold, you know, and it moves, you know, from the transaction, the order transaction, to then the order fulfillment, you know, it's very difficult to actually physically move all the gold out there. So many, many gold transactions are just electronic, or they're just leased. So the transactions can, the gold representation can move much more quickly out there. So I think, you know, that's one thing that people have to understand about the system, that every time a gold transaction takes place, it doesn't take place from an institution actually taking the physical gold and then putting it in a Brinks, you know, delivery truck and then sending it, to that entity, because by the time it gets to that entity, You know, they're just fulfilling an order from another entity out there.
Well, is there anybody taking stock of just how much representation of gold is out there versus how much real gold there actually is, allegedly in these institutions, allegedly being leased?
Is there a disconnect?
Like, is there 10 times as much fake gold out there as there is real gold, like in a fractional reserve sense of the word? What?
Yeah, that's a wonderful question, and I think it goes back to the realization that, you know, the gold market, the entire gold market out there, is not 100% transparent. In other words, you know, it's not a fully publicly traded market. There's a lot of disclosures that just don't take place. And so it's very difficult to know exactly, you know, how gold is moving, where it's moving, and by whom it's moving, and how much of it is physical. And when you buy a representation of gold, you know, are you actually owning physical gold, or are you owning, you know, kind of a leasehold of a gold, two times removed? But again, there's you know, a practical aspect to that as well, because, you know, every time a gold transaction takes place, it's probably not physically possible to actually have the gold. And I suppose you could apply it to the currency system as well. Banks, a lot of currency transactions, you know, take place not between, you know, physical dollar bills, but are electronic, you know, transactions.
With those monetary electronic transactions, they literally just make up the amount of money on the screen right there and then, and there's nothing backing it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah,
and yeah, so it's the same thing with the gold. They're literally just typing out numbers on a screen. There's no gold there whatsoever.
Yeah, well, you know, ideally, every gold transaction has an actual physical gold behind it, but I don't think that's the case. I don't think that's the case out there. And your remark earlier in this conversation that the only way you physically own gold is when you have it in your hands.
So, here's another question then. I think we'll probably have to approach it after the break. How much physical gold is in possession by the general population? And how much gold has actually been traded over the course of, these financial trading instruments? I'll be wondering, and it'll be interesting to see, how much of a disparity there really is between people who have real gold and people who just have it on a piece of paper. We'll be right back.
Bonkers.
I wake up every day is a daydream. Everything in my life ain't what it seems. I wake up just to go back to sleep. I act real shallow, but I'm in too deep. And all I care about is sex and violence. And every baseline is my kind of silence. Everybody says that I gotta get a grip, but unless I let you give me the slip.
Bonkers.
Some people think I'm bonkers, but I just think I'm free. And I'm just living my life, there's nothing crazy about me. Some people pay for thrills, but I get mine for free.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest, Tom Filer, his website's essentialsinvesting.com. Essentials with an S on the end, and WallStreetToSmallStreet.com, and of course DVDs and so on and so forth are available from ProphecyClub.com. Now, Tom, I was wondering if you could address my question. How much gold is there currently physically in circulation versus how much gold is being sold? Like, there's so much being dug out of the ground every day, sure. There's so much being minted and being put into gold bars and such, right? But...
Yep. Yeah, that's a very good question, and, you know, that's something that I'll have to go through, my research sources to kind of pull up. So that is something that, I can, you know, get my research team to do that and to get that information to you. But those are very good questions. As you know, you're trying to match what's out there with what exists with what's distributed. Hello?
Welcome back, everybody. Apologize about that. Had a little bit of a technical issue there and dropped off. Tom, are you still with us?
Yes.
Okay. As I was saying, there's so much gold dug out of the ground every day, so much gold minted every day, and there's so much gold that's currently in holdings in either coin or bar form. Is there a register where you can look just how much gold is currently in existence on the market?
There really isn't. Again, that's the lack of transparency, but, you know, there's some good estimates out there. You know, the World Gold Council is a wonderful source to go to you know, try to get some information like that. So I would encourage people to, you know, to take a look at some sources like that. But it's a good consideration because, you know, what you're trying to do is you're trying to match up, you know, what gold exists out there and then how much of it has been, you know, transacted.
Well, and the key point here is that you'll probably notice in my estimate that there'll be a massive disparity between how much gold has been sold and how much gold really exists. And I think that might be one agenda behind the lack of transparency, is to conceal from people that fact.
No, it was a little disconcerting to a lot of people who went to a local gold dealer. Now, of course, the larger gold dealers, you know, they had supply on hand, but many of the smaller gold dealers didn't have supply on hand. And so that's been very disconcerting to a lot of people who tried to buy gold.
Well, I was wondering, you know, top 10 scams of the gold industry. And so far we've come up with a number of them, haven't we? It's controlled by a more or less a gold cartel. Much of the gold is much more or less just made up, doesn't freaking exist. And to a large degree, the gold price can be manipulated by any number of insider traders and people who have quote-unquote credibility in the financial industry, like Goldman Sachs. So how much do we really know about the gold industry? Even the amount of information that we've divulged so far in this show, because of the lack of transparency, we honestly just don't know what the realities could be, eh?
Yeah. Well, let me tell you something. There's large entities who have the same thought or consideration or concern that you do. I think your audience probably knows that Germany is trying to get their gold back from the United States. I guess going back to World War II or thereabouts, since then, the United States has been holding Germany's gold. And shortly before here, gold has asked, they want their gold in their hands. I just saw a report the other day that the Swiss, and I haven't confirmed this report, but a report that says the Swiss are to vote on gold repatriation. And it's a campaign called Save Our Swiss Franc Initiative, and it seeks to repatriate its gold and double its gold reserves from 10 to 20%. There's maybe some entities and some people thinking like you are that, I suppose they own gold, but, I'd like to have it in my hands.
This sounds remarkably historic. Because I believe this was how cash first came into existence. Some dude with a gold vault, people didn't like carrying around heavy amounts of gold, you know, and you couldn't do your transactions instantly. Same problem that we've got today. And so a dude holds all the gold in a big thing, and he realizes it's not everybody needs all their gold at the same time to purchase stuff. So he just starts loaning it out to people on pieces of paper, and everybody soon realizes that he's got nothing left in that vault at all of any coin. Yeah. And so when they all come back to get all their gold back, there's nothing.
Yeah.
And what happened to that person in the historical context after everybody found out that he'd been conning them the whole time? Did he get executed? I don't know. I can't remember the story. Mm-hmm. But what kind of a punishment would be fitting for a monumental scam of this magnitude? We could be conceiving in the billions of dollars even more than that, couldn't we?
No, yeah.
I don't know. What does a guy go to jail for snatching an old lady's handbag with $100 in it?
Right, like, yeah.
15 years or something. So yeah. If you're stealing $100 billion, maybe you could go to jail for, I don't know, 7 millennia or something, you know.
Yeah.
You are to serve out the next 7,000 years in cryostasis. And when you return to consciousness, we will have reprogrammed you to being an honest banker, because that's about how long it takes.
Yeah.
Either case. Sorry. I was divulging some really weird stuff there. Anyway, can we get back onto the topic? Because how can people actually protect themselves against this? This is what you're talking about earlier about risk management assessment, right? Now, if the whole system's a scam to a large degree, how exactly do you protect yourself from it?
Well, what I'd like to be able to do is to refer people to a booklet that I wrote called Solutions in Investment and Asset Management. And this is a booklet that any of your audience who would like this booklet, could either contact you or contact me, and I'd be pleased to email them a PDF version of this book. And this booklet has a number of sections on gold, on precious metals. It covers the full array of gold management. The premise here is, we don't have control over everything. We don't have total control over our currencies. We don't have total control over, assets, like gold is, as well as other things. So they can be moved up and down by the powers that be. And so one of the ways in which to protect yourself is to use risk management, methods and means to do that, to have strategies, where, you're not, caught, on the downside when the powers that be are selling from the upside and that type of thing. So this is a booklet which goes into some of those risk management strategies and even strategies with an asset like gold on what you can do to minimize some of the uncertainties and the lack of control that you have, over some of your assets.
Okay. Well, could you give us a few examples, perhaps?
I'm sorry.
Well, let's say I'm sitting around and I've got my a whole stack of Federal Reserve notes. Like I've got 10 grand or something, hypothetically.
Right.
And I'm coming to you and I say, bro, I need to diversify. I need me some gold and some silver. What's that?
Right. Well, the one thing that we've been encouraging people to do for quite a few years now is to diversify out of paper assets. The orientation by 99.9% of the population, everyday Americans, is you buy paper assets. You buy stocks, you buy bonds, you own mutual funds, you have a 401k, that's been the orientation, for many, many years. And so we've been encouraging people to diversify into more physical assets, natural resources. And, some of those resources would be gold and silver and other precious metals. There's other metals like platinum and other things. So I think, that's a good start. And I think a lot of your audience have done that. They've begun to diversify into, from paper assets into more physical assets. But there's also, natural resources. We really believe that if people have an opportunity, and not maybe everybody has an opportunity to do this, is to try to buy some assets that are productive, assets that either provide an income or assets that provide an income and or a resource, a sustenance resource, for you. And what we do is we call this sustenance investing. For example, some people have an opportunity to invest in productive farmland. There's an asset that's real. It can provide an income, to you. You can lease it to a farmer to raise animals and or to grow food on it. So you can get an income, very similar to owning a house for investment purposes and then renting out and getting an income from that. You know, or you can, you know, take some of your income, you know, of from the sustenance of that asset, whether it be food. There may, you know, may come a day in the future where, you know, food is, you know, an asset that you want to have direct access to, and you want to own the capability to grow that food. So that's one example. There's other examples where you can actually buy physical, you know, grain and you know, physical other types of food, and they can act as an investment. You know, grains, they appreciate over time. You know, the history of grains, corn, wheat, is they appreciate over time. And so there may come a day where owning these assets are as valuable or perhaps more valuable, even on a practical basis, than owning, you know, paper assets in a 401k. So people need to take a look at how they can diversify from paper assets into these other, you know, types of assets.
Is there still much value or trustworthiness in paper assets these days at all?
Well, you know, all I can say is you know, there's value in paper assets until there isn't.
There's nothing for certain.
Right. You know, there's no certainty out there. As a money manager, you know, we're never in the business of making predictions. You know, predictions is a very bad investment strategy. So, you know, we use methods like risk management, and there's ways to manage the risk of the uncertainties of, you know, what's going to happen with, you know, the stock market. What, you know, what's going to happen with your 401k? What could happen with your 401k? You know, what could happen, you know, with assets like gold or silver?
The U.S. government now said that they're basically going to start taking away 401ks or Social Security and all of these other things. All the bankers are just taking them.
Well, you know, there's a bill, there's a proposal in Congress already. Created by a senator, which would apparently create a national or a federal government 401k kind of retirement plan. For investors, it would be similar to a 401k, comparable to a 401k. You know, the difference would be apparently is that, you know, this national 401k, so to speak, would invest primarily in U.S. Treasuries. And of course, as people kind of follow the money and follow the system, as you take a look at information out there, it just so happens that there's about the same value of 401ks as there is to the national debt. So some people believe that, you know, the idea behind this government, your retirement fund, is to encourage people to invest in that. And the way we believe it's going to be done, if it's tried, is to discourage 401k investment. And the way you can discourage 401k or individual retirement account investment is to take away the tax advantages of that. So you take away the tax advantages of those types of investments, and you give that advantage to a national or government system, and people will switch, you know, money from the private system into the public system. That's how we believe it will happen, and we believe that's kind of how it's happening with Obamacare. Where there's been disincentives to private plans kind of forced incentives into the public system.
Yeah. And it's my contention that this is not going to just happen in America. This is going to happen everywhere. And before you know it, we'll have a nice, big, loving socialist world government that controls everything and can do anything with it it likes, including your children and you. We'll be right back.
We're gonna make love. You know how I know? Because it's Wednesday, and Wednesday night is the night that we usually make love. It's because it's when everything is just right. There's nothing good on TV. You haven't had your social netball team practice, so you're not too tired. Oh yeah, sounds like it's all on. You say something to me like, I might go to bed, I've got work in the morning. But I know what you mean. You mean, oh yeah, it's business time. is business time.
It's business, it's business time.
That's what you mean it's business time. Oh.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the show that's all about business time. It's the Finney Eastwood Show. And the man who's providing the business time for us tonight is Tom Filer. Welcome back.
Hi.
This is the final segment that we've got here. What are some of the... well, I guess you've had a lot of experience in the sectors of finance and things of that nature. Is there a particular incident that has just shocked you more than anything else that just sort of really stands out in your mind and you go, oh, my freaking God?
Yeah, well, there's been a lot of things that has shocked me, but I've got to say that what's the most disappointing and enraging thing, and that's a good question. You're pulling out my emotions here. The most enraging thing really is what's going on for the past 5 years, where you had the American people, you know, the stock market crashed, you know, because the system, you know, juiced up the real estate market, and they made millions and billions. They juiced up the real estate market. You know, this was, you know, the Fed's low interest rates, and they juiced up, you know, the stock market, and the stock market crashed. And yet the powers that be made millions and billions of dollars out there. They created a derivatives system and then used these derivatives on local municipalities. When those, you know, derivatives didn't work out, these municipalities either, you know, went bankrupt or they owed millions upon millions of dollars in losses on these derivatives. The institutions that did this to these municipalities and these people, they still operate. Nobody's gone to jail. They're making more money today than they made back then when they did this to these municipalities and to these people. Today we've got, and then what happened is, you know, the system worked that we, the people, everyday Americans, bailed out their system after they crashed it on us, after they crashed the real estate market on us, after they crashed the Wall Street on us. They got their buddies in the government to bail them out. And today we've got 7.7% unemployment, which really means very little. There's 19-20% of people who are either unemployed or underemployed. Our workforce continues to shrink, you know, which hurts our GDP growth and you know, provides fewer jobs for Americans to provide good lives for themselves and their families. We've got you know, low growth out there. We've got a record number of people on food stamps, record number of people on disability, and yet Wall Street is as fat and as rich as can be out there. We've got, you know, the market, which has been juiced up by the powers that be, are at all time highs right now, and this has all been done on the buck and on the backs of the American people. And to me, that's outrageous. And I just got to just warn people out there that, you know, the system, the powers that be, try to make things seem good. But in my humble assessment and opinion, they're not. People need to keep in mind that the last time the stock market, for example, was at this height, was at these all-time highs, was back in September of 2007. And back then, I remember... You know, the system out there was telling everybody things are great, things are wonderful, because the stock market's at an all-time high. Everybody should be happy and satisfied, you know, out there. And 16 months later, after that all-time high in the stock market, which is where we are right now, we've just gotten back to that level that we were back in September of 2007. But after 2007, after it was presented, everything was great, everything was wonderful, 16 months later, the real estate market had crashed and crushed Americans all across the country, and the stock market was down 50%. So if people think things are going well or things are good right now, they've got to, you know, kind of think a little bit.
I was watching Bloomberg the other day talking about the economy and how it's rebounding, how it's going really good, how certain companies are flourishing.
Oh, yeah.
And I couldn't stop laughing at these very well-dressed, rather attractive people who have no freaking clue. And if they do have a clue, and they're freaking liars. It was intensely amusing to me amidst everybody losing everything that they have. You know, you mentioned this word underemployed. Did underemployment actually exist back in the day? You were either employed or you weren't? Was that how it used to be? And now it doesn't even matter if you got a job and work really hard. You still can't be successful because criminals will just take everything that you've earned.
Yeah. Yeah, well, of course, there used to be a day when you went to college, you went to school, you got a skill, you got education, then you're able to get a job kind of commiserate, with your hard work, with your hard study and that type of thing. So I guess you're underemployed when you can't get the type of job that you're really qualified to get. And so you end up taking something much less, and then you have a hard time, supporting your family. But I've got to say this. I've actually got to say this. There is hope. There are things to do, to be able to better order and prepare your life so that you're much more insulated, from all the vagaries and from all the shenanigans of the system and the powers that be. I very much appreciate being able to spend 2 hours, but as you mentioned, there's the solutions end of this. I guess I'm a little disappointed in myself that I spent so much time in the evaluation and that type of thing that we didn't get into too many solutions. But the solutions
don't worry,
to this,
don't worry, Tom. Don't worry, Tom. Bad news sells. Continue.
Okay.
See if we can squeeze in some solutions in the last 3 minutes that we've got.
Yeah, but there are, and there's ways that everyday Americans are dealing with the system out there, and kind of the unfairness in the system out there. So there is hope, and there's a way to protect and combat some of these things we're talking about.
Mm-hmm. I would, there's no political solution that I see forthcoming out of this. There's certain candidates who do want to rein in Wall Street as so forth, but it's not just Wall Street that's the problem. It's also the Fed. It's also the International Monetary Fund and World Bank and money lenders and all over the factions. It's also this deregulated derivatives market. It's also, I think, Glass-Steagall certainly needs to be put back in place because it was put in place in the first occasion to prevent massive bubbles from building up and causing, like, the Great Depression, which was the reason why it was put in place in the first place.
Right.
After the massive stock market fumblings going on there. Have we learned? And the general public is simply not aware of this. I think the people up the top who are making a shocking large amount of copious quantities of billions of dollars know exactly what Glass-Steagall means.
Yeah.
It means empty pocketbooks, because you can't rob people blind if they've got protection.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, there's something that I think would be great to implement. Glass-Steagall. Yep. Like a dream. I have a dream that one day, down in Manhattan with its vicious bankers, investors clutching their wallets tightly will not be raped again by these derivatives of death. I have a dream.
Oh, yeah. Yep. You've got a little bit of an actor in you, Vinny. I like that.
Yeah, I know. I ate him when I was 12.
Well, if I might, if I could, kindly give my email address out, and anybody who would like this book of solutions, investment and asset management, it does go into some of the solutions. So if anybody would like that, they can email me, and I'll send them a PDF version, through the email. They can email me and request that at the email address, my last name, Filer, Filer, at TIAC.net. That would be Filer, Filer, at TIAC.net. I'd be, pleased to get, get a PDF version of this booklet out to anybody who might want to request it.
And also, if you email it to me, I'll pop it up with the archive, so when people are downloading the audio files, they can also download the PDF from the website as well.
Will do. Appreciate that.
Okay, that'll work. All right, well, that takes us to the end of another good show. Thank you, Tom, for your time. Websites again, ladies and gentlemen, essentialsinvesting.com, wallstreettosmallstreet.com, prophecyclub.com, and the email filer at tiac.net. That's TIAC.net. Thanks for your time, Tom.
It's always my pleasure. Appreciate it, Vinny.
All right. Now, also, I want to reiterate to the listeners as well, we're having our own financial crisis, incidentally, at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. A lot of people do need to subscribe to this show in order to just, you know, keep the lights on, the studio lights, that is, and the internet running and things of that nature. So if you are capable of being one of the very, very, very generous supporters of the Vinnie Eastwood Show throughout the years, you can go to the homepage, thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. That's Vinnie with a Y, because the most important question is in Eastwood, as in go ahead, make my news. Go there, have a look at the bank account number, if you can make an automatic payment into that monthly, $5 or more, or $1 a month, it matters not. We'll give you some commercial-free archives. There's also PayPal options available there, a once-off donation or a regular one. Anything at this particular point would be very much appreciated as we're living week to week by the skin of our teeth, flying by the seat of our pants, just like planet Earth. And we'll be back tomorrow with another exciting show and another fabulous guest. Thank you very much for your time, your attention, and your generosity, ladies and gentlemen.